Well, I'm in the Los Angeles metropolitan area in California for some really mandatory maintenance for Mobile Podcast Command. So we're going to talk about Nomad Maintenance in Los Angeles in podcast 998, the Bob Davis Podcast. This one's kind of a freewheeling, kind of an open thinking kind of podcast because I haven't done one of these for a while. I'm in Fullerton, California, actually, which is, as my brother-in-law put it, about as far from LA as you can get, although that's not entirely accurate. As he puts it, you know, I could live in Dallas. I feel like I live in Dallas. People out here in Orange County don't necessarily consider them part of the Los Angeles Metro, but, you know, they watch Los Angeles media, they listen to Los Angeles radio, and I think in Metro terms, so I'm in LA, right? And that's where we're at. And, you know, I love California. I'm going to talk about that. But I want to talk about maintenance issues for the vehicle as well because, you know, I have learned that we nomads tend to ride around in relatively old vehicles in various states of maintenance, whether you're driving a schoolie or an old commander or in my case, an old ambulance or an old camper or anything. A lot of times the guys that I've seen who are true nomads are driving really old vehicles. And so maintenance becomes an issue. We're going to talk about that and some other stuff concerning California in podcast 998, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, I'm going to very quickly mention donations to the Bob Davis Podcast, which you can do online through PayPal at thebobdavispodcast.com. Just look for the picture of Mobile Podcast Command. I'll take whatever you can give me, $5, $10, $20, whatever. That, and I appreciate all of you guys who are donating to keeping us going. That is really helping the travel effort because it goes right in the tank. I mean, I'm not having sumptuous meals out here, you know, living in beautiful hotels and having great meals and living high on the hog. This is a shoestring operation, so anything that you guys want to donate to support the effort, if you feel that you want to, you can. And I appreciate likes and shares and favoriting on Facebook and Twitter. I'm also on Instagram and YouTube, which I will be activating more of the YouTube channel, thebobdavispodcast.com, soon. And it's the Bob Davis Podcast on Instagram and YouTube. Big thanks to DepoStar for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. This is the company with the inventor's heart because Mark Corin, who started DepoStar, is an inventor. And he did it because he wanted an independent, free way to figure out how to produce things and to produce things for his clients. And he's a great engineer and he is a great manufacturing partner. So if you're considering American manufacturing, remember DepoStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit them online at DepoStar.com. And Mark, thinking about asking you to build and design a conversion couch for Mobile Podcast Command, because I'm not sure I can even get one on the market because of the strange shape of this vehicle. So there you go. I try to talk about the internal processes that go on when you're a nomad in these podcasts. So, and I'm not, by the way, every time I do a podcast, going to do a quick review of how I got where I am and why I did it. But I think there's varied reasons for why people cut the cord and go on the road permanently. And some go on the road permanently with more than others. But it's been my experience that most of the people doing this are doing it on a shoestring, whether it's a schoolie, some kind of van, or whatever they're driving. And depending on the age of the person, there's a realization that you think you need more than you need, and you don't really need that much. And I've talked about that a lot as well. But in this podcast, I want to talk about maintenance and the need to have a base camp and have base camps all over the country so that you can stop down and do what you need to do and take care of business, because not only is there business stuff that has to be taken care of every now and then, where you just have to say, look, I got to stop for a week and go here and do this. Or there are literal maintenance issues with your vehicle. And the question then is, well, where do I take it? And how do I know I can trust them? And how much is it going to cost? And so forth. It's not unusual and not dissimilar to having a house. It is your house. So when you get mechanic work, when you get some kind of maintenance work on whatever ails you, these things have a great deal of importance. And of course, the cost is also an issue. And yet you have to drive your vehicle somewhere. You have to leave wherever you are and go somewhere else. So it's an interesting situation. Before I do that, I do want to talk about California a little bit. As I said, I want to talk about the trip. So I was in, I was just north. I was in the Mojave National Preserve, which is beautiful. A different kind of desert than when you get down to Joshua Tree and you go through the Joshua Tree National Park. I thought, well, I probably won't be able to camp in Joshua Tree because of this ridiculous thing at national parks where you got to make reservations. And they do have, to my surprise, two or three camps which are first come, first served. But you got to get there early in the day, and you forget it if it's a weekend. So I went through there last Thursday or Friday in podcast time, and there was no way I was going to get in there. It just was not going to happen. I did enjoy the drive. I'm surprised at the size of Joshua Tree. So I've been through Joshua Tree, where you see, you know, the Joshua trees, and it's that whole thing, and it's a magical place. And then you get further out. This is a huge park, especially if you're going lengthwise through it. And I was like, I'm either going to have to drive all night, or I'm going to have to figure something else out. And there's a BLM campground, a very large BLM campground kind of place. It's not really a campground. It's just BLM land, literally right next to Joshua Tree, between the end of the national park and the 10. So the US 10 highway is right there. So that's where I ended up. And it was sometimes these BLM sites are dirty. There's a lot of garbage. That was the kind of place. This is really an off-road park kind of place. But there were some campers, and so it was right next to Joshua Tree. So I got to spend the night in Joshua Tree, kind of, and that was great. And then I headed down the next day. I think I went down to, I ended up going down to the Salton Sea, which everyone told me I should go to. And I camped on the west side of the Salton Sea. Beautiful sunsets, an amazing place, but here's the problem this time of the year. And I don't know if this is all the time, but I had the most ridiculous confrontation with flies I've ever had in my life. I hate flies. I do not like flies. To me, they smack of vault toilets and latrines and garbage and, you know, all the things that flies love. And I don't know why they were there in such numbers, but let me just tell you a couple stories. So they have picnic tables. There's nobody at this state park. So it's one of these state parks down here. I think it was, I forget the name of it, to tell you the truth, because I don't ever want to think of it again. And there were, they have picnic tables. You know, it's a nice campground. They have showers, picnic tables, and so forth. It looked fine. There was nobody there. I pulled in. Within an hour, you'd go outside and you'd just be attacked by these flies. And, you know, I went to go make dinner and everything else, and these flies were just all over. There were so many of them. It was ridiculous. And I bought one of those because I'd had problems with flies in quartzite. And I bought one of those things where you zap the flies. It looks like a tennis racket. And I could lay that thing over the table without even moving it, punch it. You know, you turn it on, battery powered, and they would take off into this thing. And it was zip, 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 zip. I mean, it was continuously zapping them. It almost choked the zapper. And that made no impact. It was merely a dent in their effort of assaulting. Finally, I had to put out decoy food, and then I had to have my cooking table and then the next table over because there was nobody in there. I had to go over there to eat. And of course, they came out of nowhere again. They just follow the food. I had to put the garbage out of the truck, the whole thing. And it was an awful experience. I couldn't wait. I actually almost left that night. And then I thought, well, you know, I'll stick it out until the morning. And so I went ahead and stuck it out. And then the next day, came all the way down 111 to 7886 west, and that took me all the way around the bottom of the Salton Sea, out into the valley between the Santa Rosa Mountains and San Diego Mountains. Now, I figured I was just going to go on into Fullerton, which is where I am now, which is quite a ways from there. And I got up to this little road that said Borrego Springs, and then there's a Palm Canyon Resort, and then there's a state park up there. And I just turned, went up there, and was introduced to one of the most beautiful state parks that I've ever been to. Just stunning. And it is at the foothills of the San Diego Mountains. And then the next morning, after that little stay, was beautiful, really fun, lots of people there, it was great. I was gonna go 78, and then I decided to go 522. That takes you up into the mountains. Wow. You know, I love the colors in the desert. I love the dun and sort of that faded green color. I love the heat and everything, and it was really hot there. So it was in the hundreds. You get up into the mountains, and the temperature dropped very quickly. In fact, I had to turn the heat on when I got up in there. I turned at one point and looked behind me, and there was a valley probably twice as large as the Shenandoah Valley, and all in these sort of brown desert colors, beautiful sun. Back, spent the whole day of this beautiful drive up and down through those hills all the way on into... these different towns along the way, small California towns all along the way, on the way to Escondido and Ramona. And I ended up going down to San Diego thinking, well, maybe I'll get a place to camp. Well, it was Friday night. So no, you were not getting a place to camp on the beach in San Diego or anywhere near San Diego or Los Angeles, California. And so I came on into Fullerton, and this is where I am now. So let me just say very quickly about California. You know, you hear a lot, and I've said it a couple times, you hear an awful lot about California in these days in the United States, and how California this and California that, and everyone's moving out of California, and they're all moving to Texas, and nobody wants to live in California, it's a horrible place, blah, 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 blah. California, and I've said this a few times, is stunning. It doesn't matter whether you're out in the desert or whether you are, you know, up in the mountains, whether you're on Route 66, that little spur of Route 66 just south of the 10, right out there in the Palm Desert or by 29 Palms as you get close to Joshua Tree. It doesn't matter. Everywhere you go, for the most part, you're going to have an amazing visual and natural experience in this state. It's just stunning. In fact, my plan was to go up the one, you know, the Pacific Coast Highway when I leave here, and I'm going right back out to Death Valley because I can't get enough of the desert. And I want to go out there and sort of reconsider what's going on and where I'm going from here, because it doesn't matter where I go. So that was one of the reasons for the maintenance. And in the second half of this podcast, we'll talk about the maintenance. But California... it's just an amazing place. And the fuel is expensive, and it's, especially when you get around LA and San Diego, there's a lot of people. Anywhere you want to go, anything you want to do, there's going to be a lot of people. It's just like Chicago, you know. And this is what I like in it too. I was kind of disappointed because I really wanted to camp on the beach, but then I don't want to be in a concrete camp area with 50 other RVs and everyone's got 6 kids and they're running around, and it's just that's not what I want to do. If my experience was on the weekends, people from around here, if they have an RV, they go somewhere like that and they hang out, and they hang out with their friends, and it's just fun. That's not my idea of fun. So my idea was I was going to be the only, you know, truck on the beach, and I was just going to have this incredible experience, or it was going to be with a bunch of surfers or something. Well, that's not going to happen. You know, I know that certain people out there in the world have this dim view of California. When you come here, you understand why they're so weird about the environment, and you understand a little bit about how people have to do what they have to do to get by in California. I would live here. I think California is a great place. There's plenty of small towns in California. I drove through some of them, whether they're in the desert or in the mountains or in the northern part of the state or the southern part of the state. It's an amazing place. And I'm a little bit tired of the constant complaining about California because of California's state government. And yet there are plenty of very liberal state governments across the country. You never hear about Minnesota in particular, Massachusetts in particular, and some of the other, eastern seaboard states. So enough with the bitching about California. It's pretty damn cool. That's all I have to say. Okay, so we're going to talk about maintenance. And I'll tell you another reason I love California when we talk about maintenance in the second half of this podcast. Also appreciate Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast all these years. When it comes to keeping all your systems operating at home or business, when you have plumbing or heating problems, call them. They do quality replacement and repair of all plumbing and heating systems and air conditioning and all that. And they're available at 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Greg is all about systems at this point, and he said to me, you know, people have 100-year-old technology in their homes and they don't even know it. It's inefficient. We can replace all those systems with efficient modern systems and they're much better. And, I'm all for, he's a traditional guy. I'm all for traditional stuff. But when you replace this stuff with systems that work, so heating and air conditioning, all that stuff, you'd be amazed how much more efficient they can be. And don't forget AC checks. Minneapolis, I think, was 68 the other day. You're going to be above 70 at some point here. It has to be at least a couple of days of 70-degree weather for them to check the AC. It pays to have them check the AC. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com or click on their banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, I was texting with my friend Jason Waldron, the owner of Cartridge World in Maple Grove, the other day, and he sent me this thing from John Moynes, who's a friend of his. Rage Against the Machine never specified what type of machine they were furious with, but I reckon it was probably a printer. And the basic idea there is, yes, people, it's okay to hate your printer, and most people do, because it's probably the worst piece of office technology, and it hasn't progressed that much, and they keep having problems. So your solution is Cartridge World. Part of the problem is the print cartridges, because they're so expensive. Cartridge World at Maple Grove can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. They're guaranteed to perform as good as new. Some businesses qualify for free printers, and you get free delivery on qualifying orders. Cartridge World, serving the universe, from Maple Grove, Minnesota, 763-420-6632. They are keeping me in ink on the road. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com that says, "Why pay more to print, Cartridge World?" I talked about our affinity as nomads with our vehicles, regardless of what kind of shape they're in. I told you I have a friend that has, like a 2006 or 7 Yukon or Suburban, and it's called the Pig. You know, everybody's got a name for their vehicle. I've seen 89 Chevy Vista vans, or whatever they're called, various conversion vans from back in the day, in various states of repair. People with aluminum foil stuck up on the windows, everything from that to old buses, literally old Greyhound buses or school buses that are unbelievable and not so unbelievable. And really cool six-wheel drive short buses that have, a differential in front and, dualies in the back. Those are, I actually want one of those. Those things are awesome. In fact, I might just put a differential on my front so I can have six-wheel drive. It's just really cool. And you develop an affinity for your truck, and then that's your truck. Now, people say to me all the time, why don't you get a fifth wheel? Why don't you get an RV? You should get an RV. Various mechanics. Bob, why don't you just get an RV? What about the frame on that vehicle and all these other things? And then I obsess about this. So the RV question, let me just tell you about the RV question. Until this changes, if you are thinking about nomading it, you better have a lot of money, because if you want an RV with a shower and a toilet and carpeting and different lighting and a four-burner stove and an oven, blah, 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 blah. Unless you're real handy and you can buy a 2001 Ford 450, whatever it is, Class B camper van, and you can rip all that stuff out of there and put down new carpeting and get all the mold out of it and so on and so on, then you're going to pay at least $145,000-$150,000, and that's a minimum stroke for one of those big vehicles. If you want some kind of a conversion van, you're going to pay minimum $100,000. I mean, it would be, I'd be surprised if you could get a new one for under 100, and the used one's ridiculous. Like, ridiculous. Used ones for 170. You know, 10-year-old vehicles for, you know, $95,000. And I'm just not going to do it for a lot of reasons. For one thing, I wouldn't even buy a house right now because houses are ridiculously expensive and you're going to lose money. You know, you buy when there's blood in the streets. With anything, whether it's stocks or generally speaking, or whether it is real estate, you make your money when you buy, not when you sell. So if you buy low and sell high, you're good. If you sell high, you got to wait a long time, and that time may never come. So people buying houses right now, I'm really glad because I just closed my mother's house. Thank you. But I wouldn't buy a house because they're ridiculously expensive. It just doesn't make sense to me. Same with RVs. They are ridiculously expensive. I remember when you could buy a conversion bus for $150,000. Now, I remember I went into some RV place just for fun at one point on one of my trips back when I was still operating under a tether. And I was pricing. I said, I'm going to see how much these RVs are. Brand new, Class B. So the kind, the E450 or Chevy 4500, whatever, Ram 4500 trucks with the with the camper right on them, not backpack campers, but you know what I mean. And they were $45,000 brand new. That same vehicle is now 70, 100, 120, whatever. So the reason is, if you want to have any money on the road, then you got to figure some other option out. Now, I bought this truck for $4,000 in 2013. And over the years, I've had to put money into it. I had to get it painted. I had to do things to the truck here and there. But for the most part, when I got it, it had 112,000 miles on it. It now has almost 200. And it still runs great. And it still functions. It doesn't leak. The box, it's an old ambulance, is fabulous. I haven't done anything to the inside at all. There's been no conversion to the inside. And what I've learned is it serves all my needs. You do not cook in the vehicle anyway. Even if I had a Class B camper, I wouldn't cook in it because I don't want, you know, grease all over the walls and everything else from pan frying steaks or whatever you make. And I don't understand, again, everybody thinks, oh, I'll have this house on wheels. And you will, but you don't have the same necessarily, and this is just my opinion, the same ability to keep it clean like you would a house. So, some people would disagree with that, but I just find it, I think it's difficult. You're in tight spaces, keeping things clean, and then you have these systems. So an RV refrigerator, now I'm talking about a refrigerator for an RV, go price them. They're really expensive for even a small one. You want a microwave oven? Well, you got to buy an RV microwave, because if you put a regular microwave in your truck, it's going to shake the hell out of it, and it's going to break in about 2 months. So then you're going to have to buy another one. I suppose that's cheap, too, if you bought a $90 or a microwave every now and then. But then it's got to be powered properly. You want 1,800 watts of solar power on the roof? Okay. That's very expensive. You want to have three deep cycle batteries? Okay. You know, I have three starting batteries. That's it. And people say, why don't you put solar on that thing? Well, I've got a 7.3 diesel generator under the hood. All I have to do is start the truck for 14, 15 minutes and let the automatic idle bring it up to 3,000 or 4,000 RPM until the batteries are charged, and we're good to go. So, do I need solar? Because if I had solar in this thing, I would have to have deep cycle batteries as well. So now I got five batteries instead of three. One is a starting battery. So what I have is three starting batteries, which essentially function, in the words of my friend Steve Steiner, as one giant battery. That's it. You got one giant battery. If you need to charge it, start the truck up and drive it around for 10 minutes, and you're ready to go. As long as the batteries are new. That's basically it. They have to be no more than a couple years old. So there might be some options in terms of changing the type of battery. Maybe I put an Optimum in there. something to that effect. So you end up servicing what you have. And the purpose of this podcast is to talk about service shell shocks and where you get serviced, and this idea that you kind of have to have base camps set up all over the country so you can get things done when they need to get done and you're not in an emergency situation, because that's where you spend a lot of money. Well, here's the situation with Mobile Podcast Command. I just noticed it was riding really rough, and then I started to have this shimmy problem in the front end, so I took it to Thurston Spring Service in Richmond. I talked about that. These guys have been in business since the 1890s. They literally make leaf springs for big trucks and all sorts. They manufacture and fabricate whatever you need. And I took it in and I said, this thing is pulling to the right, something fierce, and it's eating tires. It was just eating the right tangent. Really bad. So it needs an alignment. Well, my friend, it didn't need an alignment. It needed four new ball joints. Remember, this truck is 21 years old. So this is original equipment. They just said, hey, man, you got to get four new ball joints. Okay, well, how much is that going to cost? $600. So we did it. I said, hey, come on, they're only $29.99, these ball joints. And he's like, yeah, but we got to put them in. So it's a lot of labor. So this is what happens when you're servicing. And four new ball joints, it did improve the situation. This is in Richmond. Drove out here. All along, I'd get up to about 65, 70 miles an hour, and it would vibrate. And I could control that vibration a little bit by the speed, but for the most part, I had to keep it under 60. And I'm on back roads most of the time anyway, so, but any kind of road impurities, let's just say, any kind of rough road, you'd really feel it, like really feel it. So I thought, well, you know what this thing needs? It needs new shocks. So I took it to a place in Quartzsite where I got the tires. Great guys. This is American Tire in Quartzsite, Arizona. They service RVs all the time. They're literally assholes and elbows all day long, just working on these vehicles. And especially during the season. These days, they're not so busy. But I pulled in, we were talking, and he said, okay, well, let's take a look at your shocks if this is what the situation is. God, look at the front. Well, you know, what's it doing? Told him, yeah, you're probably going to need new shocks in the front. Like, what about the back? I go, it doesn't have shocks in the back. It has leaf springs, because this is what I was told. And when you hear why I was told this, you're going to laugh. So he gets under the truck and he goes, what do you mean you don't have shocks? Here they are. And I looked under and I'd seen them. And I said, you're right. There are shocks in the back. And they were frozen solid. I mean, they were rusted original equipment. And he goes, these things, this is 90% of your problem right here. Okay, so what can you get me shocks? No, we can't get them today. It's Quartzsite, Arizona. It's going to be at least a couple days before we can get any kind of shocks for you. All right, fine. So I'm going to go on ahead because, you know, and at that point I made a California joke. Oh, unfortunately, I got to go to California, right? So I went over to California, got here to Fullerton. Why? Well, my brother-in-law lives in Fullerton, and he's lived here a long time. He said, hey, man, I have just learned that California is kind of a hub of tire and wheels and fix-it mechanic repair shops, and they're family businesses, and, you know, they're super competitive because of this. And he said, you know, any kind of mechanical work, you come to this part of the town, you know, La Habra, Fullerton, La Brea, because there's all these places are all over the place. This is him telling me this. Okay, fine. So we go to this place, Salinas Tire. And immediately, I love this place. It is just sort of a compound of low-slung buildings, tires everywhere, wheels everywhere, guys everywhere, cars everywhere. I went there with my brother-in-law because he needed to get a tire fixed. They fixed it in about 10 minutes. And I said to the guy, I got this truck, blah, 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 shocks, yada, yada, yada. Can you guys give me a referral? Because all you do is tires and wheels. Oh, no, dude, bring it in. Okay, I'll bring it in tomorrow. Brought it in. Okay, yeah, we can do this. What do you want? I want new shocks on the back and I want new shocks on the front. Okay, pull it in. So I was there all day watching, and I get a big kick out of watching how businesses operate. And this thing, on a grand scale, this Salinas Tire place is so awesome. And I'm not doing a commercial for them. I'm just telling you. They ran about 20 cars, 50 cars through there in the 6 or 7 hours I was sitting there. And it was just a pleasure to watch these guys just work and work. It was amazing. Like the pace of work. You think California is laid back? These guys were hauling ass all day long. It was unbelievable. So they're working on my truck. And by the way, they just jacked it up. They didn't do anything except jack the truck up with these little mini jacks. They didn't put it on a lift or anything else. And boss, come over here. So I go over. You got a big problem here. Uh-oh. So what's the problem? Get under the truck. These shocks had frozen solid, rusted in to the brackets and the sway bar in the back. So he's like, we got to pull them out. When we pull them out, they're literally going to pull all of this stuff out. We're going to have to replace the sway bar and these brackets. Okay, fine. How much is that going to cost? Okay, you know, $350 for the parts, God knows what for the labor, which ended up being a little bit more expensive than I wanted, but who cares? Because I'm going to tell you what I learned. So the situation was, there was a spot in the back where the shock had sort of broken through a little part of this box. It's an ambulance, and so it's one of the outside compartments, no big deal. Didn't think anything of it. I said years ago to a mechanic that I work with, what's this? And he goes, oh, you got bushing problems. We're going to have to fix that at some point, or the back end is just going to fall off. Well, fast forward 5 or 6 years later, the back end, this thing has been everywhere. The back end has never fallen off, but it didn't ride right. So they took all day yesterday, ripped all that out of there, put in the new sway bar, the new brackets, put in these giant shocks. I mean, the back end shocks on this thing are huge. They're like half a yard or more long and probably 6 or 7 inches wide. Big shocks. Put them in. And I went in, and they had my number wrong, so they never called. I thought it's either bad news or good news. Went in. My truck was sitting ready to go. And I looked at it, and it was sitting pretty different. And so I went in there, and he drags me out there. He goes, I got to show you this. And so they showed me everything. So that hole where the top of the shock had punched through, it was gone. Like, the shock was not even visible anymore. Now you got an empty hole in there that is completely clear. This thing sits up at about three and a half, probably 4 more inches of clearance in the back. It finally looks right. So I go, well, how's it going to? It's going to, boss, it's going to be great. It's going to ride great. Okay, man. You know, paid the money, big money, not like ridiculous. Got it out on 57 on this, you know, they call it the 57. It's it's not a U.S. highway, but it's a California freeway. Couldn't go fast enough. So I had to go down about 3 miles, go switch over and go to the south side where there was no traffic. So I had this thing up to 85 miles an hour in like no time. And it was solid as a rock. It is amazing what this thing does. So here's the lesson I learned. Now I'm going to get back to my other mechanic guy who said, oh, Bob, you know, you got to watch out for the frame, yada, yada. And I had my friend John Holland in Nashville go. He worked for Road and Track magazine. He goes, Bob, you're obsessing about this frame. You know, I got to get a new truck. I can't, you know, on and on. He goes, take a knife, get under the truck, and just dig that knife into the frame at various spots. And if you hit soft metal, at the worst, you can take it in. They can fabricate pieces of the frame and re-weld them, and it'll work just as great as the old frame within reason. Okay. Well, the frame is fine. It's just the things hanging on the frame in various spots have rusted, and those are the things you got to end up replacing. So the thing that I've learned is you can take something that's 21 years old, and if you're careful about maintenance and you have the right people doing it, you can maintain it and make it just as good as new or better. So I've got the shock issue. Now I can put over the road, you know, what do they call them? Off-road tires or all-terrain tires on the back if I want, which solves all my off-road issues. And the next question is, well, okay, now what do you do? Now I'm feeling much more positive about overhauling the engine and the transmission and maybe putting in a new differential if the one I have is whatever. But the thing I realized is this box has been riding, it's been metal on metal. So if there's any issues with the frame, we would have known it, because this box weighs probably 6,000-7,000 pounds on the back of the truck. It's aluminum. It probably has been literally metal to metal for years, probably since I've had it and before. And that's probably why they got rid of it in the first place. So it's really important for people doing this Nomad thing to establish, and this is a process of driving around the country and visiting people and having these base camps where you can go, as long as you're not too much of a burden. And I sleep in the truck because I don't want to be a burden on my brother and sister-in-law. You know, and they got three kids and we're having a lot of fun. And then more relatives are coming this weekend. And that part of it is great. You need that. You need these little spurts of family. I love my nieces. They're great. We went to soccer games and, you know, choir practices and volleyball. And we're riding around getting coffee and having a great time, yelling at the kids. They're yelling at us. We're doing all this stuff. I miss my 10-year-old. You know, he's 30 now. So it's kind of fun to, you know, see them. And but you don't want to be a burden, but at the same time, you really need these base camps. So now when I go and I'm on the Eastern Seaboard, if I have a problem with the suspension or something, I know I take it to Thurston Springs. I have a problem with suspension or I want new tires, make your way to California and you go to Salinas Tire. And in well, they have different locations, but the one I went to was in La Habra. It's kind of fun to sort of find these places where they can do the work on your, or if you're in Quartzsite, American Tire, you know, you go to these different places and we need these locations to get these things done. As far as refitting the inside, well, that's going to be on the docket. I got to do some stuff on the inside to give me some more creature comforts, not too much, but enough. And I could go on, probably do a whole other podcast, but I don't want to burn. This is podcast 998. I want to burn 999 and 1000 talking about it. But one of the things that's really fun is you find these places that can take care of you, and you need to have these base camps because you can't go to truck stops and get service. It's going to cost you an arm and a leg. And you don't want to be on the side of the road and have to get emergency service, which you can get. You know, it just costs you more money. And tows for these kinds of vehicles are very, very expensive. You might get to sleep in a bed, which I don't like to, because I feel like I'm getting soft if I sleep in a bed for more than a couple of nights. So this thing had to stay overnight at one point, and I'm back out in the van now. And the other thing is I don't want to be a burden. So I'm kind of making, slowly but surely, the process of making a decision to stay with this older vehicle, because I think I personally am appalled at the price of RVs today. And I think that the fact is, without much trouble and obviously some expense, but not a ridiculous, certainly less than a brand new RV, you can make old things really functional. Now, one of the reasons I love this vehicle is it has a 7.3 diesel, which is a phenomenal motor and engine. And just, I mean, I love being out west in the mountains and watching these other RVs with even V10s struggle up these mountains. And this thing gears down, boom, she goes right up the hill like a spider. It's amazing. So, and I've had many of these old RV hands come up and go, is that a 7.3? Yes, don't ever get rid of it. So I love this truck. I've always loved this truck. Is it perfect for doing the whole RV thing? You know, so far I'm surprised. There are some frustrating things, which I can talk about at some point, but with the camp shower now, I don't really need any. I've got the camp shower. It serves all my needs. I get everything done that I got to get done, and it's actually surprisingly comfortable. So you can spend a fortune on your little nomad house, or you can just go with what you got, and it will be just fine. You'd be surprised how easy it is to do with whatever it is that you got. And I'm super excited. Now I just want to drive. I got these new shocks. This thing runs like, it's like driving an old Cadillac. It's just the greatest. And so now I just want to go. So I'm waiting for a wheel cover. I lost a wheel cover, so I'm waiting for that to arrive from Amazon. Waiting for a check and some other stuff. And I should be out of here probably sometime next week. If you want to help animals, listen up. InspireAndFlourish.org serves those groups that help those animals, and they do a few rescues themselves, and they're always all about it. I talk about Stephanie Fleming, my friend that runs InspireAndFlourish.org. It's all about these cats and dogs that love us so much and are often just thrown away. It's terrible. Send your tax-deductible donation to Inspire and Flourish by visiting InspireAndFlourish.org or click on their banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. It is food truck season at 36 and Lynn, the independently owned and operated community-focused refueling station at 36 and Lindale Avenue in the Lynn Lake neighborhood in Minneapolis. Not only are those guys into the community, and they do great things for the community, they have great events, they also feature a great selection of locally sourced products in the store. Store is all about the whole thing. I mean, the 36 and Lynn store is great. Great coffee, great food to go. Remember 36 and Lynn next time you swing through Minneapolis. You need a gas or a cup of coffee. For more info and all the information on 36 Lynn events, check them out online at 36lynn.com. You can click on their banner at the top of the page at the bobdavispodcast.com. They're on Instagram at 36 Lynn. They have some really great stuff on their Instagram feed. I saw this one where this idiot was filling up bags with gas. I mean, because of the gas price thing recently, he was putting it in a box. It's just unbelievable. So check them out, 36 Lynn at 36 and Lindale Avenue. Again, they're an independently owned and operated refueling station, which means I can pass the savings on to you. This one was a little long, but I'm really having fun talking about the truck and travel, and I hope you like it. Podcast 998. Thanks for listening.